it's very important to us to consolidate, to build in a normative, national, international level, a kind of constitutional digital pact for the artificial intelligence era, age. It is so important, this new fundamental right, because if we forgot the relevance of this fundamental right, we can convert the rule of law into a rule of algorithm. And that can't happen. There is a false dilemma between regulating and innovation. I don't think, I can't see things that way. I think that we must innovate, but never innovate when that cost is fundamental rights.
Welcome to Regulating AI, the podcast that brings together global diverse voices to shape fair and responsible AI regulation worldwide. I'm your host, and today we have a fantastic guest, a guest that we met at the AI for Good Summit in Geneva a week and a half ago, and we had to have a conversation with her because she's got some amazing things to talk to us about. And that person that I'm talking about is Raquel, welcome to the Regulating AI podcast.
Hi, what a magnificent introduction did you make. Thank you so much.
Well, much deserved. I actually, for our listeners, you shrunk it down to maybe 10% of what really is her very distinguished career. Raquel, we have a global audience. This is an audience of policy leaders, members of Congress and ministers, their staff, entrepreneurs, and others. So from their perspective, we want to talk about various things, but let's start talking about the EU AI Act, which you're very familiar with, which represents a really landmark moment in global AI regulation. From a constitutional law perspective, what are the most significant challenges this act poses, particularly on fundamental rights protection, Raquel?
Well, I think we can speak of a kind of artificial intelligence driven revolution because artificial intelligence raises a lot of questions, and he has there are constitutional challenges that we must face and must try to speak of them. And the question is, artificial intelligence demands a profound transformation of the structures and principles of the constitutional law, such as separation of powers, for example, or the rule of law, or even the protection of fundamental rights. Well, for example, Portugal, and as any member state of the European Union, are a social democratic rule of law state. And that is a concept that it is the most developed topics for the constitutional doctrine, but it is also a concern of international human rights law, and it has a concept of universal validity. If you, for example, check the list suggested by Venice Commission, identifying a rule of law state, you can easily conclude that the use of artificial intelligence currently doesn't meet that requirements, and that is there is something that we must face. So what I say is, it's very important to us to consolidate, to build in a normative, national, international level, a kind of a constitutional digital pact for the artificial intelligence era, age. And that is some kind of translating into a digital social democratic rule of state law, rule of law state. So first of all, we must consolidate the traditional identities, the constitutional identities, because ultimately the constitution is our last defense, mm-hmm. and also the last safeguard. Secondly, we must consolidate and define the new fundamental rights, because there are new fundamental rights that came from artificial intelligence. For example, we can see, for example, the rights, the fundamental right to explainability, and that is a very important fundamental right, or the right to a human oversight. Mm-hmm. And so in some cases, we have to consolidate the right to a human decision, because that is very important. And of course, the right, for example, to demand the disconnection of a harmful artificial intelligence system. We think it's very basic, but we have to write them. And mm-hmm. Third question that I think that is very important is to consolidate the principle of legality in this digital context, because all the public administrations are going to use artificial intelligence, and they are going to use artificial intelligence to make decisions that with a widespread impact in fundamental rights and in other mm-hmm. Constitutional protected values. So mm-hmm. we must ensure that the use of artificial intelligence is clearly regulated, the limits of that use, and some kind of the existence of mechanisms of accountability and effective mechanisms of auditing. So, in summary, I think it's very important now to guarantee that no digital powers, no digital power, public or private, make decisions that impact the legal sphere of citizens without a clear basis, without transparency rules, and without mechanisms of accountability. And that is very, even if those decisions are made through artificial intelligence or algorithms. And that is very important. And I think if we think, for example, the right to explainability, it is so important, this new fundamental right, because if we forgot the relevance of this fundamental right, we can convert the rule of law into a rule of algorithm. And that can't happen, because that happens when we allow machines to make decisions for us, but we don't understand how they reach those decisions. So I know that the part of the doctrine says that, for example, the AI Act, the Artificial Intelligence Act from European Union, doesn't contemplate a strong and the generic right to explainability. But the question is, we must highlight this importance and say that if we need to make answers, and we need to ask questions, the questions we want, and we need to receive the answers that I can understand why the algorithm reached a certain result in a concrete case. And that is very important in this perspective of the use of administration, by public administration, you know. For example, for example, there is another way of saying that we should use the public procurement rules, because we could guarantee not only the AI systems but also the public administration. That way, we can guarantee that there are compliance with the requirements of Artificial Intelligence Act, because the legislator obliging the entity, the contracting entities, to demand to award the proposals to guarantee some kind of aspects, they can reach an indirect result of that compliance. And so in the use of by the public administration, there is a lot of things to think and to reflect, and I think we are only in the beginning, you know. For example, in Portugal, these are those kind of topics that I'm talking about. They are rather new, you know, because we have to review all the administrative code, and so it is very important.
So you covered quite a bit of ground, Raquel. Just to follow up on several points there, the EU AI Act is basically, you know, categorizes AI systems by risk levels. From a constitutional perspective, do you think this risk-based approach adequately protects fundamental rights, particularly for vulnerable populations?
That's the million-dollar question. I think artificial intelligence has a brutal impact on fundamental rights. Especially the generative intelligence, the general purpose artificial intelligence, the agentics. Well, they raise questions in cybersecurity, privacy and data protection, copyright, etc. For example, in data protection and privacy, the traditional techniques we use to protect fundamental rights are not, they are offer limited protection, just like data anonymization or differential privacy. So we spend so many time, we doctrine the courts, and so building and creating a self-informational self-determination, since the Google Spain ruling, 2014, the European Court of Justice, and just when we thought that the building was strong, artificial intelligence threw us to ground zero. How can you, Sanjak? How can you exercise your rights to be forgotten in an artificial intelligence chatbot, or how can you control your footprint in ChatGPT or Gemini AI, any kind of this chatbot from artificial intelligence? How can you, for example, how can you demand safeguards for self-expression or access to information if you don't know the sources, if you don't know which criteria is used to prioritize some contents that you receive? Or, for example, how can you know if that chat bot is using some kind of disinformation campaign? You can't. All these freedoms, all these rights, are affected by artificial intelligence. And it's very difficult to say that the AI Act can effectively guarantee the protection of fundamental rights. I know that everybody says that AI Act is some kind of excessive burden for companies and, well, but that's not correct. I don't agree with that perspective, because one thing is bureaucracy, and bureaucracy is not regulation. You know, there's a trend in confusing those concepts, and it doesn't make sense. First, the AI Act, and it's not a valorative, neutral choice. Choose a risk-based regulation. And that means that there is no, it dispenses a prior intervention of a regulator, stricto sensu. And only the high-risk systems have some rules, because the others, and there are risks in the others, are only subject to codes of conduct, and they are volunteer. So how can you say that this is too much regulation? And I think also that it depends, I think, too much in self-certification, self-regulation. So the choice that the European legislator made was precisely to prevent hindering innovation. And I know it's a difficult task to find the optimal balance between innovation and the protection of fundamental rights, but I think it's all going to depend on several factors, like how European Union is going to implement Artificial Intelligence Act, because European Commission, there is some kind of, how can I say, fluctuation between the official speech about an alleged regulation relief, because we have that speech, but at the same time, we see that the European Commission is always producing guidelines and surveys and so on, and producing important documents to guarantee the implementation of the AI Act. So it depends a lot on those kind of guidelines, and also, and this is a very important question, in the national legislative acts, because although it's a regulation, it needs implementation in the national laws. And of course, there's a huge challenge, because there are a lot of regulations now, digital regulations, as you know. You have a Digital Service Act, DSA, you have GDPR, you have GMA, you have, okay. So those regulations must be combined in a very clever way, you know. And it's not very easy. It's not easy because they can, for example, GDPR complements AI Act. So you can't have, for example, a data protection authority or a artificial intelligence authority or a digital service coordinator. And each one applies and guarantee the enforcement of each regulation. It's very important to have a transversal and comprehensive regulation, enforcement of these regulations. So I think it all depends also in the way the regulators will understand a subtle distinction, and that is between what is legally required, what is ethically desired, and what is technically feasible. And that's a very important distinction, because there are different ways of, for example, of the ethics in the regulation. And ethics is not the same as law. And if something is ethically, regulated, it's not... it's not an enforceable regulation. And as I said before, only the risk systems are subject to enforceable rules, in binding rules. The others not. They are only subject to alternative regulatory instruments as soft law, code of conduct. And ethics, it's very important, of course, because ethics are not functional equivalent to law. They complement each other. Well, some authors compare the lot of codes of ethics and codes of conduct. So of course, there are consensus in some teams. But if we look closer, we understand that there are different interpretations of the same principles, ethical principles. So it's very important to make this distinction. And it's very important that the future, because we don't have yet, we will have next August 2nd, we hope, we will know the regulators of IE, the supervision of market authorities. But it's very important to have this this distinction and the way the regulators will implement this distinction, because it's different when what we want to law regulate and what we want to ethics regulate. And it's a different kind of regulation. And it's, I think it's very important.
So Raquel, I mean, you talked about the difference between, you know, the ethical rules, which might don't have a legal basis, and, you know, the rules that are there. And you basically said there's a big difference between having rules, implementing it, and you're concerned about that. Let me just push back a little bit to you. Today in the world, there are basically three AI centers. There is the European Union, there is the American, and there is the Chinese, so to speak. These are the large ones. I mean, there are many other countries who are doing some incredible work. The perception, at least around the world, maybe outside the EU, but in talking to a lot of people, even in Europe, like the former Prime Minister of Italy, who wrote this huge piece of work that talked about what some of the challenges are, is that maybe the EU is focusing a lot on regulation and not on innovation. That's why some of the European companies leave and come to the US or go somewhere else. And this is a very fast-moving technology, which, you know, really needs a lot of leeway. Just 2 days ago, in Washington, D.C., which is where I am, the White House, the President Trump, released a set of executive orders that basically said, our interest is to unleash the power of AI. We are going to not hold it back. We are going to give it from a data center, from energy, from permitting and other things, because we want to have a dominant role in this technology, and we're going to export this to our allies, etc., which is a different message that comes from the European Union. What is your perspective? Obviously, you believe that even the EU, what it has done is not enough, or if what it has said needs to be implemented. But that's the question that I'm trying to figure out that comes up quite a bit, Raquel.
Well, I think there are different, but it's traditional, the Europeans versus the Americans. There is a different way of facing this challenge. For example, it started with GDPR, not with IE Act, because GDPR was the first digital regulation, was the first step to this European regulation. And it was obvious, it was evident that the United States had a different way of interpreting, of understanding the relation between freedoms and rights and other kind of values. So, as you know, there were a lot of problems between European and Americans because of the ruling Schrems. I think artificial intelligence hacked, European hacked, there's nothing new in that, you know. I think somebody said, I think there was a scholar that said that regulation is what makes Europe great again. I think it's a...
Americans say that America innovates and Europe regulates. Yeah. That's a little... so just anyway, yes.
Yes. So I think it's very important because there is a false dilemma between regulating and innovation. I don't think, I can't see things that way. I think that we must innovate, but never innovate when that costs us fundamental rights. When we speak of a trustworthy artificial intelligence, we are saying that we can we can trust the artificial intelligence, and that is much more important that than any kind of innovation that don't have that concern. So I don't believe in any kind of artificial intelligence innovation that don't care about fundamental rights. You know, for example, the European High Act, of course, there is a generic concern about fundamental rights, but it doesn't elaborate on them, don't densify on them. So when they say that there is a dilemma between the European approach and the American approach, well, I don't see that as a dilemma. First, because of what I said before, because European High Act is a regulation, is a risk-based regulation, and that is not a hard law regulation, you know? That's it. And of course, on the other way, we can speak of a kind of Washington effect when the administration, the Trump administration, was elected. Well, there are two main topics, two main facts that we can say that there is a kind of a Washington effect. First was the third draft of the Code of Conduct for General Purpose Artificial Intelligence. Well, it was clearly different from the anterior, the second draft. And it raises the third draft, it's not, because the European Commission published last week the final draft, but about the third draft, it raises a lot of questions of fundamental rights. And second, the withdrawal from the Artificial Intelligence Liability Directive. It was a very important step in European politics to react to some to that Washington effect, you know. So, if this Washington effect is going to make more or are going to produce another results, I don't know. I think it all depends on those factors that I told you before. The way the European Commission will implement the for example, the guidelines or for high-risk systems that are not yet known. And, of course, the national legislative acts that the European member states must produce. So I don't think there is a dilemma between innovation and fundamental. I don't believe in that, you know. I think innovation must not be a harmful innovation to fundamental rights. And if you see, you have high risk, you have medium risk, you have limited risk, okay, in the categorization, the European categorization. So to the medium risk, well, but there is risk anyway. To the medium risk systems, there are only codes of conduct. Anything else? So I see the Hayek in another perspective. I see that, as I said before, I think he trusts too much in self-certification. And, well, let's see how it is going to be implemented next 2 years. The next 2 years, it is going to be very important.
Yeah. Raquel, some American companies, large ones who, you know, maybe who are hyperscalers, etc., have said that they might hold back the release of some of their products in Europe because of either the uncertainty or the questions around that. What will be the implications within the, well, there are financial implications for these companies, but there is and implications for the AI ecosystem within Europe too, if some of these companies say, hey, I don't think it's too high risk for me to be releasing my products here.
Well, the main hyperscalers are American, right?
Yep, all of them.
All of them. So there's obviously that is going to be very problematic. But I must say that European Union is working in some kind of, how can I say, some kind of sovereignty, digital sovereignty. And of course, they are promoting those kind of economy products. But you must see that for in this regulatory contest, it's very difficult to understand that our data is not controlled by the European Union, for example, or the data centers, for example, are not subject to the same rules that are the same digital services. I understand that kind of speech, but what can I say about that? Well, only that latency is a new coin, and but I think not everyone has already noticed that. Well, yeah, and I also used to say that we face the problem of net neutrality and the build of some kind of a fair internet, but the latency raises other questions. For example, maybe neutral, temporal, how can I say, temporal neutral right, you know? Well, but I think I always thought about that, but I don't have any specific answer to that. Only the notion, the I'm aware of the importance of the latency and the impact it will have in all the economies. And why are all the states and the companies investing in latency? I understand that, but I also know that latencies can be a vector of discrimination and problems with fundamental rights. Okay, so as a constitutionalist, I always say that. We must be concerned with fundamental rights. Of course, we must find the optimal balance between fostering the innovation and not raising questions to the fundamental rights. I don't know if I, well, I tried to run away from your question.
No problems.
I did no it.
Yeah.
No, I think it's very, it's a very, it's a very, very important question, but I don't have the answer. No.
Okay. Well, maybe you have an answer to this question. Is, you know, the EU AI office is going to have significant supervisory powers. What the European Union AI office, it will have pretty significant, very important supervisory regulatory powers. What are there safeguards or constitutional safeguards that will prevent regulatory overreach by this office?
Well, that's a very
This is a question a lot of people want to know.
There's a very that is a very specific question that I wrote about that question a lot. Well, because it's a very technical question, we have a problem. Well, Sanjay, we have a great we have a huge problem because because of the limits of the primacy of the principle of primacy of the European law. Well, the European Court of Justice, the understanding is that when there is a regulation, the jurisdiction passes to European Court of Justice, which means that all those regulations we are talking about, the SA, the EEAC, GDPR, are about fundamental rights. And that's the core of the constitutions. So if the jurisdiction passes to European Court of Justice, what is going to happen to the constitutional courts? Well, and you could say something like, well, they disappear. They are going to have a marginal, well, the problem is the current citizen don't have access to the European Court of Justice. And he barely can go to the European Court of Human Rights. So the problem here is that the digital regulation are raising specific questions of constitutional justice and the way to effectively protect fundamental rights. So we will have, I think, not now, but maybe in 2 years or three, we are going to have problems, collision between the European law and the national law, you know, and there is no solution, there is no answer that we can apply without problems. So I think it's very important to understand that if the jurisdiction passes of fundamental rights passes to European Court of Justice, the European citizen doesn't have direct access, you know, only after if the courts, if the national courts, because the dialogue is between national courts and the Court of Justice. So that is another problem when I started this interview saying that we are assisting a constitutional revolution. And that it was one of the aspects because we have to think we have to redefine the constitutional justice also and the administrative justice. And that is very, very important and very urgent, you know. But we are still in the beginning.
Yeah. We are all in the very beginning. Finally, Raquel, and then we'll get to the lightning round. There were a bunch of leaders, business leaders and others, who said, now obviously it didn't happen, that there should be a two-year moratorium on the EU AI Act because, you know, it'll hinder innovation, et cetera, et cetera. Did you agree with them that there should have been a two-year moratorium in the implementation of that?
No. Okay. Look, Sanjay, look, I think the issues brought by artificial intelligence are even more sensitive. Well, let me tell you the example of the hologram of Jesus Christ, that was used in a church in Switzerland. Well, it is very dangerous, you know, because it raises, well, we can say, oh, that's good because it's a way of speaking directly to Jesus Christ, and there is innovation, okay, but it raises questions of authenticity and manipulation. And we can think of political manipulation, religious manipulation, and it is increasingly sensitive. And that is not going to wait 2 years, you know. Mm-hmm. We must act now.
Yeah.
We must act now.
We must act now. So finally, we will act towards this lightning round of questions. At the end, we basically to make it a little interesting for our listeners, just one word answer from you. These are just a few questions, Raquel, for you. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is your view. Is the EU AI Act a success or is it a compromise?
Depends. Let's see. Let's wait and see.
Okay. Okay. AI regulation, should it be global or should it be regional?
Well, both. I think it must be both. We can't have one, only one perspective of that regulation.
Okay. Is the Brussels effect, is it enduring or is that temporary? Is it going to happen?
I think it's going to happen, but it also depends on the effect of the Washington effect.
Washington effect versus the Brussels effect. That'll be very important. And this is something you've spoken a lot about. Algorithmic transparency, is it essential or is it impossible?
Well, I think it must be, there must be a level of transparency that it's obvious, that can be obvious, and we have the right to know if a public administration use algorithmic, how my situation is defined by the algorithm. And I must understand the criteria.
Yeah. AI governance, democratic or technocratic?
Well, both. I think it must combine both perspectives, because you said technocratic, it was
yeah.
Well, because there must be scientific, right? We must, mm-hmm. because but there must also be it demands frequent actualization, and sometimes the democratic process is slower, you know, is slower than the innovation. And we must reach a compromise between both.
Okay. Finally, AI's future, are you optimistic or are you concerned?
AI is not future, it's present, you know.
Okay, AI is present. Are you optimistic or are you concerned?
I'm completely optimistic. Very
completely
optimistic.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Well, we are optimistic too, and we are optimistic about this conversation. Raquel, thank you really for sharing such profound insights, you know, on the constitutional dimensions of AI regulation, especially the EU AI Act, which as it navigates the complex terrain between innovation and fundamental rights protection and regulation. It's been really incredible to hear your perspective, because sometimes we don't get that, and how do you protect democratic values, human dignity? So, you know, the question that you raised really make us all think, and to our audience of policy, AI policy leaders, the constitutional lens that Raquel brings to these discussions is essential for developing truly comprehensive AI governance frameworks. So thank you, Raquel. Thank you to our listeners at Regulating AI. We believe that diverse voices and rigorous debate are essential for developing fair democratic AI governance principles. So until next time, to our listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Raquel, this has been fantastic. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.